podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Money Talks. It is John Gibbons with Dave Powell. We have rebranded this slightly. We're still trying to work on this new format. We've got a new set for those of you watching as video. A little bit more serious for serious business finance people, I would say, Dave. But we're still going to get into basically what we've always done, really, which is looking at football finance. So mainly from a Liverpool point of view, recognising our audience, but also looking at a wider Premier League, and there's a lot going on with the Premier League at the moment. So if we've got time at the end as well, we're also going to have a little chat about our neighbours as well, Everton, because there's a lot of interesting thing going on there. But Money Talks, as Deacon Blue once sang, Dave, and the ticket prices is where I want to start, because it's interesting to me about to look at it from different perspectives, and we've done a lot at the Anfield Wrap with regard to fan voices, and we've had fan opinions on, and we've had people, you know, giving their own opinion on how it affects them, but also how it might affect others and therefore the atmosphere. But trying to look at it from the club's point of view, you know, they obviously, I could say, what do you think their rationale is? They put it out, they've said what their rationale is, which is it's more expensive now more than ever to put on any events, and what Liverpool do every week or so is put on events at Anfield, and it's getting more and more expensive for them to do that. And so that is why they're trying, you know, to offset that slightly by increased ticket prices. I guess what gets confusing for fans is obviously they see other revenues go up, and then also they see bigger stadiums. So they think, well, you're getting more money for, you know, more seats anyway. But obviously for the football club, they still felt the need to increase prices.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, as a football fan, I mean, I'm always against price rises anyway. But from a business perspective, it's important, I think, to look some element of context about it. So the period, I mean, I think it was the first time in 7 years, was it, that Liverpool have rose season ticket prices?
It went up last year.
But is it like in terms of, I mean, last year was the first time in 7 years. So during the period kind of early 2010s to 2017-18, life was quite good for Premier League teams. Still good now for the biggest, but you had inflation was low. The broadcast revenues, now internationally broadcast revenues, we've spoken about this numerous times, will continue to go up in the next cycle. But domestically, for the most recent period, they are effectively plateauing. So we've got signs of stagnation, which, and through stagnation, you eventually get decline. So there'd be an element of concern about that now. But previously, media revenues domestically were still rising. So clubs had low inflation, more money than they'd ever had, considerably more money than they'd ever had through broadcast deals domestically and internationally. But to kind of implement season ticket rises at a time when there would have been marginal gains would have been looked on dimly. It also would have been, you know, a headache which many felt is not worth the reward. But now we've got to a point whereby inflation has risen considerably. So I think if you look compared to 2014, so 10 years, I think inflation, I mean, if your £10 in 2014 is about, you know, costs about £13 now. So, you know, it's about 30-odd%. So things go up, things become more expensive, but you kind of reach this point whereby things are becoming more expensive, yet the money coming in is drying up. So during that period of incredible growth for the Premier League over the past 10 years, there's been considerable wage rises, and also the transfer market continues to drive major transfer fees. And these clubs do it to themselves. You know, you only have to look at, I'm sure other clubs, the biggest clubs have been looking at Chelsea and think, what are you doing to us all here by just offering this money, because it just makes everything more and more and more and more expensive. And that's where they've got to, really, I think. So it's a case of, I mean, I know the clubs say that operational costs have increased 40-odd% or something like that. Everything is more expensive, but also it's more expensive for fans to put the heating on, to put the electric on, to go anywhere, to put petrol in the car, to shop for food. Everything is more expensive. So it's all relative. But looking at these as businesses, they're probably thinking, where can we make up this shortfall? It's not always, I mean, the idea around commercial revenues is the more they generate, it's supposedly to go back towards the product on the pitch or development in the club, et cetera, et cetera. So this looks like a way of raising ticket prices to offset elements of the rising costs, which have been seen through kind of, you know, inflationary pressures, macroeconomic pressures, things like that. So that's largely what it comes down to. So, I mean, as businesses, they have rising costs, and there's only really, I mean, football is always seen as an aside to normal business because we have an emotional attachment, emotional involvement to it. You are not customers, you are fans. You know, you are, if the price rises, you're not going to go somewhere and support a different team. You're just going to have to try and either make the decision to not go or to find that money. And that's obviously a deeply unfair choice to force supporters to make. So I think that clubs are in a quandary. I mean, I don't think any club really wants to raise season ticket prices because there's no good PR that can come out of it. And the gains are usually fairly marginal. But when the margins become tighter in terms of running the business, and it's important to remember most of these clubs run at a loss in Liverpool, attempts to break even every year. You're looking at different ways to raise 3, 4, 5 million, you know, and it's not chicken feed. It's important money that goes into the bottom line, but it's being done through kind of leaning on the relationship they have with supporters, which they know will be there to meet the cost, and obviously that's why people are against ticket price rises, because it's opportunism. But from a club's point of view, they'll be looking at it thinking, well, it's less than in line with inflation. It's just a case of trying to mitigate some of the costs.
Do you think, from the football point of view, from the football club's point of view, there'll be conversations around, you know, you mentioned PR there, how this will land with football fans and what likelihood there'll be the reaction to? Because it feels to me that there is, as you say, always this kickback, and from a Liverpool point of view, you know, this is the first time that, for example, Sky and Kop have said we're taking the flags away. They've done that before. We've had walkouts, which is obviously an even more extreme thing, but it was a more extreme situation. It would surprise me if there hadn't been an acknowledgement within some of the club, or someone would have put the hand up in the meeting and said, like, you know, is this price increase worth it when you factor in, you know, what the sorts of negatives are going to be? So is it just that they're looking at it from a spreadsheet point of view and thinking, well, we need to raise more money, sort of, you know, in lots of different ways? Because fans always say, oh, you know, we'll look at the commercial deals, you know, we raise the money off that, but there'll be, you know, people in finance within the football clubs are saying, well, actually, we need to, ideally, everything would go up and then we'd have even more money. And like you say, we could put that on the pitch and buy better players and everything like that. But do you think the conversations are sort of taking place where they talk about, you know, the effects, the non-financial effects of these things? And I guess what I'm asking is, how hard is that to put a value on? Because I presume if those conversations were taking place, and I can't imagine that they haven't, they've decided that is less than the value of the ticket prices, rightly or wrongly.
They would have absolutely taken place. I mean, there's, whether it's, you know, the FSG of previous would have previous backlash from supporters for attempts to raise ticket prices in years past. They've also felt the heat from Boston Red Sox fans in the US over attempts to raise prices. There is any, you know, they're smart people, so they're smart enough to know that anything like this incurs the wrath of supporters, because it's not a normal business. Like I said before, it's an emotional attachment we have to it. So there will be the risk against reward, I suppose. I mean, they will look at it as, I mean, what was it, 2% this time? And I think, was it last year, it was 2%?
Yes.
It equates to 4% over 2 years. They will look at that and think I think many clubs would have liked to have done this earlier, so the rises become smaller. So, I mean, if you take that 2% rise this year and compare it to Nottingham Forest 24%, it's, you know, it's small, but it's not insignificant. So I think they would have tried to find the lowest point of entry whereby they can raise prices and make some kind of meaningful return to allow the business to continue to offset costs, so costs don't get swallowed up in growth in other areas. So, you know, if you've got costs going up in certain areas of 10, 15 million and you're just requiring to skim money off the top of a rise in commercial revenues all the time, you're never really moving anywhere. So they're probably thinking if they pass on some of that cost to supporters by, you know, by a small, or what they would see a small amount, then that goes some way to addressing the problem and takes the pressure off having to achieve more in, whether it be through merchandising. Player tradings can be volatile, so you could make 100 million one season player trading, you could make five the next, you know, so it's volatile. So this is something they have some control over in the bottom line, but also given the fact that this year is probably, you know, this current financial year into the next is going to be a fairly fallow one because of lack of Champions League football, etc., and still as they move out of that, and when they return to Champions League next season, things will improve. But it's about finding ways to offset cost, I suppose. But from a PR perspective, yeah, these never go down well. There's no, nor should they. There's no element, there should be no fan base anywhere that just kind of takes ticket prices lying down, because if you do that, you open the door to greater rises in the future or more frequent rises. Clubs should know that this is kind of a last resort that they have to do to kind of meet their own financial obligations. But so there should never be an acceptance of it at all. But you know, sometimes maybe an understanding of the reasons is a better thing.
And football clubs are trying to communicate these reasons, and you know, one of the reasons obviously is where the football clubs are set. And Nottingham Forest is quite a particular example of it. Is they're talking about, you know, financial fair play and the pressures on them, and the idea of not being able to sort of spend what they want. And I'd say that's not necessarily, you know, a bad thing when you consider some of the spending that is going on. But you know, income is going to become more and more important, and there's been changes to the Premier League rules around sustainability and around financial fair play that I do want to talk about. But before we get into the now, just to sort of go back a little bit, because it's been a month or so since we last spoke, and I do want to talk a little bit about the punishments we've seen so far under the old rules, which is points deductions in particular for Everton twice and for Nottingham Forest. And as supporters, you're sort of looking at that, and it's as clear as mud, to be honest with you, and some of the arguments that Evertonians have certainly made, and I'm sure Nottingham Forest fans as well, I just speak to less of them and see less of them sort of on a day-to-day, but Everton and the politicians who've come out have talked about transparency, and where I feel like, listen, I think Everton are banged to rights, to be honest with you, but where I feel like there is, I do have sort of some sympathy, is that from a punishment point of view, it does feel like they're making it up a little bit as they go along. And so Everton got 10, they appealed, it went down to 6, then Forest got 4. Is that because they were better or worse? I sort of don't know. And then there's the second one for Everton, which was 2. As someone who looks at these things in probably more detail than I do, did the points deductions make an element of sense to you? Or I guess, do you have some sort of sympathy with fans where they're like, it just feels like this is very sort of arbitrary? And then the problem with that is when it feels like that, then you can shout, where's they come up?
Yes. The arbitrary thing is interesting, because I mean that there is no clear and defined rules ahead of all this. So the talk was that there was kind of this arbitrary figure which the Premier League placed of, for argument's sake, say it was 6 points for a breach, and then I don't know what it was that we're talking about, 2 million, 3 million for every 5 million you were over, etc. But none of this is documented anyway. It's just, they're just numbers. You know, so the Premier League wanted a 12-point deduction for Everton.
That's right. They wanted higher on the second.
They wanted more this time. So I think it was, they wanted five. Okay. So that's 17 points potential deduction. You go into administration, you get 9 points. You know, so we have a government regulator, independent regulator, coming down the tracks, which the Premier League said they wouldn't lobby against. But lo and behold, Richard Masters, of course, turned up in the Times, and said how bad it was for the Premier League as a product, its growth prospects, etc. That's tantamount to lobbying, is it not? I mean, it's kind of the early starts of it. It's going against what they said they wouldn't do. So Premier League want to show they have teeth. They can regulate themselves. They have robust measures in place for financial breaches. Now, I don't think there's no question that they had financial rules in place whereby each club signs up to these rules at the start of the season. Every shareholder, you know, AGM, they know what the rules are. And Everton breached them. But there was no clear and defined rules about what this punishment is. Points deductions were expected, etc. I mean, that's kind of detailed. They've detailed that throughout. And the independent commission, when they reviewed it, said, you know, a breach should always kind of bring with it a points deduction. Now, I mean, we've spoken about this privately. I mean, I don't like sanctions like that because I think they have, that's like a ripple effect, and they have wider ramifications for other teams as well. And we were at the Financial Times Summit, and I think it was Andrea Traversa, who was UEFA guy, was talking about how UEFA don't agree with, in the main, points deductions.
Yeah, it was interesting because he was talking about uncertainty, and that's exactly what we've got now, is that there's appeals going on, and so there's teams at the bottom. And even if you forget about the teams who are involved, let's think about the teams who are, you know, Luton Town, don't actually know what they're competing against.
No, and that's wrong. And I mean, transfer embargo, surely, I mean, punish the team competitively by kind of limiting their ability to grow the wage bill the following season or sign players, whatever. But everything else impacts teams in the here and now. So, like I say, Luton don't know what they're up against. They can't budget effectively because, you know, they think, well, is a Forest going to have their appeal upheld? Are they closer to us? Do we, you know, this, that, and the other? So, yeah, but I do think there's an element of there was no clear and defined rules around all this. So you can only reach the assumption that this has kind of been, the Premier League have felt their way through this, because these rules have existed for more than a decade. But we talk about season ticket prices before. Guess what? Costs have gone up across the board. Inflation means all these costs have gone up. Wages have risen because of the great times the Premier League had during that 10-year period. So that 105 million 10 years ago, people were thinking, well, not, you know, no one's making those losses. you know, it'd be crazy. But now, guess what? Even teams, the likes of Arsenal, had to kind of keep their powder dry in January to make sure they're compliant. Villa having to do the same, even though they're banging on the door of the Champions League this year. Newcastle,
they have 100 million pounds.
I know. And Newcastle have the wealthiest owners in world football, made the Champions League last year, and it's sell to buy. So the advantage is already baked in for the biggest teams anyway, but they are rules which haven't been fit for purpose for a while, but it's only this past 12 months that it's caught up with them and think we have to deal with this. But maybe they've kind of been overzealous, dealt with it with a heavier hand because of this looming regulator, that they want to show that they can regulate themselves and they're strong and they deliver robust punishment, etc. But all they've done is kind of make it's in my view, it's kind of diminished the standing, the brand of the Premier League globally. I mean, because you can have a season this year where you've got two teams finishing the season with asterisks against their name for deduction of points, and you've got a team that could come up who are going to start the season with an asterisk against their name next season. It just seems completely ludicrous to me. So
I say especially when other leagues have proven that it can be done differently. So you look at the La Liga and you look at Barcelona, and they're one of the biggest clubs in world football, one of the two biggest clubs, I'm not going to get into that argument, one of the two biggest clubs in Spain. And they were just told last summer, you're not allowed to buy any more players. And there was all these levers and stuff like that. And it was, you know, quite entertaining to watch from afar, you know, these levers and these things that Barcelona had to pull. These levers they had to pull, and these things they had to sell in terms of future TV revenue and stuff like that to get footballers kind of through the door. But you're watching that happen live, and there's being told you can't do this until you've done this. And so when you're looking at the mess of the Premier League and Everton again, when I've got to say before, they're getting 2 points deductions for two different time periods in the same season. And you're thinking, well, other people are just saying, no, you can't buy Beto. That's what should have happened, is that someone should be saying, you can't buy Beto. A, he's rubbish. And B, you haven't got the money.
Yeah.
He's doing that because it's not Richard Masters.
It seems crazy to me that you can engage in the transfer market during this period. So as mentioned about transfer embargo, that should really be what is the punishment, because ultimately that is impactful for clubs who want to strengthen. It makes it more difficult the following season. If you want to sign players, you have to sign them on free transfers or you have to move players out to make that work. So at the start of the season in La Liga, every team submits their budgets, their forecasts, etc., and they're given what they're allowed to spend. Now, Barcelona, obviously, were able to pull on all these levers. I just imagine these huge, giant metallic levers that they're just pulling down. You know, what's that transfer revenue for that media revenue for 2075? Pull that one down. We'll sell that. But they've done all this, but they're able to just about keep their heads above water. But even then, I mean, you look at their transfer business during that period, it was limited. They couldn't go out and spend. They've not been able to engage in it. I mean, the likes of Coutinho deal is not happening anytime soon. And they were kind of the drivers of that whole beginning of the transfer market where we just spend. But these clubs know what they're spending, so they know what they can do. So yeah, you're spot on. I mean, I think it's foolish to engage in the transfer market when every single player you sign carries risk, but especially when you're adding what was Beto, just for an example, is 24-25 million. Obviously that transfer fee is amortized over the length of his contract, whatever. But you can't just think, he may be great, may keep us up, we may have big resale value, but it's all risk. You're just adding risk at a time when it's like saying, well, you're over, you know, you've got a huge credit card bill, but best thing to do is just carry on spending until we knock on your door for the bailiffs, you know. It's things like that. So transfer embargoes are what should have been, but my sympathy for Everton lies in the fact that these points deductions are completely arbitrary. They're just, and to be punished twice for within a matter of months for two separate financial periods, of which two of those years fall in the same period, is complete. It's just, if you look at it objectively, it's a complete nonsense. You know, it's the Premier League have just tied themselves up in knots to the extent whereby they're just trying to find a rational way out of it. But you know, it's a rational way out of the irrational. So, I have very limited sympathy for Richard Masters and the mess that's been created. I have to say, I do have sympathy with Everton's points deductions, less so with the kind of the engage in the transfer market when they shouldn't have, because it's, you know, they knew the risks.
So the rules are changing. The rules are being brought more in line with UEFA, and it should be said that these rules have already existed for certain clubs in England for a while, the ones who qualify for Europe. And so, you know, the part of the irony of Everton saying, "Oh, we want to do this to get into Europe," is they might not have been able to play in it once these sorts of got there because of sorts of finances. But it never quite happened for them. I think it is sort of fair to say so. But in the future, and it's been sort of announced this week, but it's been in the pipeline for a while. Basically, all the clubs in England are going to have to go to the same rules that the ones who competed in the Champions League and the Europa League have had to for a while, which is spending tallying to your income. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I mean, it'll be a version of, or very closely aligned to, UEFA's squad cost rule, which squad cost ratio rule. So it's your wages for, I think it's relevant wages. So that's wages for players and the manager. Also with your amortized costs. So I mean, whenever you sign a player, you know, that transfer fee, whether it's 50 million, it's spread over 5 years. So that's, you know, that's your annual amortization charges. Is that 50 divided by 5? So your amortization costs plus severance costs, so for sacking a manager, those kind of extraordinary costs that clubs incur, as well as intermediary fees, so agents paying player agents. Now that's offset against operating revenue plus player trading. Now it's not been confirmed, but in the way it works for UEFA is they take the best, I think it's the best performing of the last three years player trading, because transfer markets are volatile. You could sell £100 million player the previous season, but bring in £5 million this season. The idea is that takes away some of the volatility. So it's that and then that is given as a ratio against that. So in UEFA, it's 70% in order to, you have to, so that's your squad cost rule. So 70% for those factors against your operating revenue and your player trading profit against. I think the plan is for the Premier League to be 85% for clubs which operate outside of Europe. So their view would be that, in effect, helps your Palaces and et cetera to spend a little bit more, because if they were brought in line with 70%, it's very, very difficult, because a lot of them are already operating it. 90%.
Yeah.
So to shave a lot that much money off is very difficult. Whereas the big six clubs, most of them, save for Chelsea, are operating at 60 to late 60s, you know. So I don't think there's any. I think maybe Arsenal might be 71, 72. Liverpool, about 65. They've been that for a long time. That's why the where kind of cost management comes into it, so they keep that level figure. The issue is, from my point of view, is that this 70%, so Aston Villa, the difference, so if Villa make the Champions League next year, it's not coming in next year, but if Villa start to bring themselves into Champions League football and the conversation around Europe every year, now their squad cost ratio rule is very different, to a Liverpool or a United or a City. So they would be, to have them comply with this 70% seems wildly unfair. But I mean, that may change, I don't know. But points deductions are still going to exist. So that's a big difference between UEFA's and the Premier League. Premier League insists that points deductions will still exist. What this does, I suppose, is it brings it more in line with knowing what clubs can spend at the start of a season, as opposed to just concentrating on stemming losses by deducting this, that and the other. They may feel it streamlines things a little bit, makes it a bit more easy to understand, saying, right, this is your squad cost rule, this is the money you need to save, this is what you've got to spend, rather than, because losses, you know, they can be incurred to a variety of things. But I mean, we've become used to kind of deducting all. I mean, Chelsea sold a hotel to, you know, to be compliant. It's all down to your squad cost and how much you're spending on the product and the pitch as opposed to what's going on around it. So that's the idea behind it. Will it work? I don't know. It's not a panacea to all ills of Premier League, because it won't make it any more competitive. It will, the same competitive advantage exists that did previously. It doesn't solve anything. It just means...
It's worse. For some of the art clubs, obviously...
For those towards the bottom, it may make it worse for them. But for the idea, as I said, if for clubs that are gunning for Europe, they're going to immediately have to come from this 85% and make 70%. It's a big difference to make up. So I just feel that it doesn't solve anything. It doesn't make the situation better for those who probably need it to be better. I mean, because none of the biggest clubs have got punished. Yeah, you know, the clubs that get punished are clubs that have either come up and spend money to try and stay in the league, or they try and have an element of ambition. I mean, that's where everything stemmed from. I mean, Farhad Moshiri tried to bridge the gap between the revenue and European football by bridging that gap himself by spending that money. Yeah. And obviously that's come back to bite them hard, because they never achieved European success or qualified for Europe in a meaningful way. So it doesn't solve anything. It's just it just maybe makes things easier to look at and budget for at the start of the season, though, and what clubs have got to spend, and takes away some of the grey area around who's breaching what and why they've breached it. But it doesn't alter anything, really.
You mentioned the regulator. Do you know where that's up to? Because there's quite sort of secretive on timescales, aren't they? There's a ticking clock with this government, we believe, and so. You know, but I wouldn't imagine that the Labour would sort of shelve it. But I think it is an interesting one, isn't it? In terms of, you know, I think it's a little bit closer than what they're sort of making out. They just don't want to say. I wouldn't be surprised if it is sort of sooner rather than later. But what's your instinct then? And do you think there's any sort of threat to it from these Richard Masters articles in the Times of London?
Having this general election kind of looming, It just makes everything uncertain. I mean, because will it be something which the Conservative government try and rush through as? They'll look at it and thinking it's a way of reaching maybe areas. They'll look at some of the clubs in Red Wall seats that have strong working class backgrounds, whereby their clubs have been marginalised through the growth of the biggest clubs and been left to flounder and suffer. They may be thinking, well, this regulator is a good thing, that's a great thing, and they may think it wins some votes on the back of it. It'll just be used as, you know, the classic political football now, and that's the concern. I mean, when this kicked off, I mean, there was no no plan for this election being for now. So it just means that the tone has changed, the narrative has changed. I don't think Labour government would shelve it, but would it take, I mean, it just means it'll get kicked down the road further. So it's either going to be soon because they wanted to get through as a potential vote winner, or it's going to be delayed even further. And I think that's why Richard Masters has sensed this opportunity to make a stand and say, well, maybe appealing to a change in heart. There's a change in government. He's probably thinking, does that impact the chances of this getting through, make it easier to make a case? I don't know. But it's like with everything with the Premier League, it's absolutely as clear as mud. But I just feel it's kind of this election is going to cloud the issue and mean that we're kicking the can further and further down the road. Unless they try and rush something as well, as I said, to be a vote winner, because it could be in some areas of the country. And it could, you know, that could be what sells a change in heart for them. But either way, it's a looming thing for the Premier League, which they don't want. And it's quite clear now they've drawn a line in the sand. They said, we don't, you know, Richard Masters said, this isn't what we want, having initially said, well, you know, we go along with it, but we won't lobby against it, even though. But now kind of it seems like it might start to, the gloves might come off a little bit. And that's not good for the game.
No, absolutely not. A bit of certainty for supporters as well. Will be nice, but we'll see what happens next. We have got time, so we'll do a bit on Everton. You've written quite a lot. I don't know, you went for obviously the bottom line and stuff like that. You Substack around 777, and I know the company who you've studied in a reasonable amount of detail, and they need a reasonable amount of focus, don't they? Because it's, you know, from the outside, it sort of looks a little bit of a mess. It's a strange one for me, because you're looking at it and seeing how other things are going, and you're thinking, well, why on earth do they want to take on Everton as well? As sort of everything else that they've got going on, but they've obviously got the reasons to do it. I was expecting it to be blocked, if I'm honest. With my sort of limited knowledge, I was thinking, oh, there's no way. Like you said before, you know, they're aware of the Premier League are aware of eyes on them, and then the regulator, and I thought, you know, this might be something where, again, they show they've got some sort of teeth, but... Yeah. It's looking to me, you might disagree, more and more likely that 777 are going to be able to take charge of Everton, as long as they can fulfil sort of certain criteria, which you think if they want it enough that they will manage. But are you surprised sort of got this far, really? And are you surprised that they do want to sort of take on a football club that from the outside just seems to be another problem for them amongst others?
The stadium is key to everything for their interest. I mean, it's a huge asset, which... I mean, they would be acquiring the club for a small price from the Shearer, but the stadium is the asset, and they see the growth in that. You know, they'll think they can clean it up, turn it around, make a profit on it in the future. I was surprised that it got approval, largely because it's September last year when they first agreed with Fahad Meshiri to acquire his stake. It was 7 months ago. In that time period, Jim Ratcliffe, yes, a minority stake, I appreciate, but kind of had his sail waved through. And yeah, 777, the length of time it's taken obviously means that there have been concerns in the Premier League around some potentially opaque parts of 777's business, where the financing comes from, etc. But they've got conditional approval now, so there's four conditions they have to meet in order to... jump that hurdle. I think the Premier League have done that because the uncertainty around it, it comes at a time when Fahad Meshiri doesn't want to fund this football club anymore. He's checked out, I think, for all intents and purposes. But they have a stadium build which is ongoing, which needs continued financing. Yeah. They need working capital for players' wages, for keeping the lights on, etc. Now, for the past 5 months, the people providing that have been 777. I think it's up to 160 million now. These are interest-bearing loans, so it's not, you know, it's not free.
It's not insignificant.
No. So one of the Premier League conditions is that these loans are converted into equity. Another one is money will be placed in an escrow account provide security over funding for the remainder of the campaign into next season, etc. And another one is proof of funding for the full amount of required to complete the stadium build. Now, the final one was a repayment of a loan to MSP Sports Capital, who a New York-based investment firm. They were talking to Mashiri last year around a deal for convertible debt. So they were going to offer, they were going to give some money and eventually turn it into 25% equity of the club. That never happened because it got blocked by one of the many creditors that Everton have, Rights and Media Limited. They thought it diluted their security in the stadium, etc. So it didn't happen. But they still loaned Everton the money to continue work on the stadium. That loan was supposed to mature on Monday of this week. And one of the conditions was they had to repay this loan. Now, they managed to get an extension on repaying that, which is... they felt the turnaround between conditional approval from the Premier League and this maturity of the loan was 3 weeks. It wasn't enough time to find the money to do all these things. From what I was told, that people I spoke too close to it, they were saying that, that three of the conditions they could have met by the end of last week, potentially, this one they couldn't have. So it's going to be weeks, not months, months is the extension. But for 777, it's a... I mean, they know now what they have to do to acquire the club. I mean, they've had conditional approval, but the Premier League have done it, I think, because they're concerned that no one else is stepping into the breach and funding this thing through to completion. Now, 777 have got clubs in other countries, some doing better than others. I think they'd probably point to their success in, or a success story for them being Genoa, which they would say they've improved. But fans of some other clubs, they understand the Liège, etc., would say that they haven't improved their situation. But I think the thing that has probably surprised them is the level of scrutiny that comes with trying to acquire a Premier League team by the English media is next level. You know, you're not getting that same level of scrutiny in Germany or Belgium or France. So this has kind of opened up kind of Pandora's box into their wider business practice. Yeah. Now, it's important to state they have approval from the FCA, so Financial Conduct Authority, to act in the UK, etc. So I think it's an element. Some elements of their business may be unpalatable to some because it's kind of seen as kind of predatory lending in some respects, I suppose. However, they would argue that they are, you know, fully above board, legal. They face some legal challenges, legal cases, and over certain unpaid debts, etc. I think that's the thing which has really concerned the Premier League over unpaid debts. But 777 and all these cases argue that there's a reason behind this. This certain debt being unpaid, and this certain debt being unpaid, and this certain debt being unpaid. So, ultimately, this has been poured over by professionals, and they deem them appropriate to run a club. But obviously, concerns, which means that they have four things to tick, and they're very expensive things they have to tick as well. This isn't paying £100 deposit just to, you know, that you're not going to get that back. These are. Significant amounts of money that they're going to have to find and lend from other businesses or other lenders that they have in their wide portfolio of interests. Do I think they'll do it? I do, because I think they kind of have to.
They've come this far.
Yeah, there's another capital need in the next few weeks. So the deal Everton had with Bramley Moor Dock was with Lango Rogue, the construction company, was you can have fixed price for cost, materials, etc. But that deal breaks if you miss a payment and there's something else. So that's been key to make sure this carries on going and keeps going, because the stadium is the biggest asset, so they're not going to want to see that fall away. I believe that 777 are going to be the ones finding that capital again one more time. I think it probably takes it to not over 200 million, but close to 200 million all told. I think this would be the last one they do as just kind of providing junior debt to the club. I think this will be. I think the next time they'd be doing it, they'll be the owners. But it's a further commitment to the fact that I think they're going to see this through to completion. Whether it's good, whether it's bad, difficult to say because Everton's situation is so precarious. There isn't a queue of people coming up to take on because there's so much debt loaded down to the club. Requirements for more capital before you see any return. I think it's for a lot of people it's seen as a real headache, and the uncertainty of what league they're going to play in, etc. That's all a real headache for potential investors. So I do think it'd be 777. I don't know what the time scale will be, but you know, I'd imagine before the end of the season.
That's it. That's interesting. Huge thanks to Dave for coming in. Hope you've enjoyed that. We got through a lot, didn't we? We did ticket prices. We did football finance changes. We did 777. What more could you possibly want? If you do want more, I would encourage you to check out Dave's Substack, The Bottom Line. You'll find it on his Twitter. It is Dave Powell on Twitter. And yeah, if you want much more of that, which I'm sure you do, Dave's one of the best about it, and he's writing about it all the time for you, straight in your inbox, so you can sound clever, like hopefully I've done today. Thanks a lot to Dave. Thanks a lot for you guys for watching or listening, however you've consumed it. Hope you've enjoyed it. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.